it is. It's basketball. It's not a fucking soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My name is Joseph Corr from Stats Perform Media and other outlets. I'm joined today by Jamie O'Loughlin, and we're releasing this on Monday, the 23rd of November. There will be an episode tomorrow on Tuesday recapping all the major news, but for now, an interview with Jamie O'Loughlin. Jamie is the lead assistant coach with the Cairns Taipans. First of all, a big thank you to Joel Hitt, friend of the program, for putting me in touch with Jamie months ago, and Jamie and I were finally able to sit down and have a chat. In this particular episode, we talk about the commentary of the NBL, Jamie's scouting regime, the recruiting of imports, working with agents and signing players, or the role of an assistant coach within that. We talk about DJ Newbill's departure, Cam Oliver's return. We did have this chat on Friday, so that was before Scott Machado had been announced. And we also talk about the breaks of the game, Kawhat Noi in particular, his injury, his starting spot, coming off the bench, and his misfortune at the NBA draft. We spoke about that. We talk about how and why the Cairns lost to Illawarra three times, how and why they lost to the Wildcats in the semi-final. We talked about feuds within a team, how they arise and how they're dealt with. And lastly, Jamie goes through podcasts that he enjoys. Now, sadly, this podcast was not one of the ones he named, but that's okay. I don't take it personally or anything. The three things I'd hope that people take from this interview are, number one, how to watch and evaluate players, and how to scout, and how to get a little bit more of a greater understanding of how the game works. Number two would be how there's meant to be a level of animosity, conflict, and or aggression within a team, and how that doesn't necessarily destroy culture. Jamie talks about that at length. And then the third thing, I suppose, would be just what's involved in the day-to-day operation of a season. I kind of got, as best I could, a diary of Jamie's week and what's involved for him and the players around him. For this interview, Jamie was seated on his porch. Cairns is exactly as you'd imagine it from if you've read travel brochures or books or TV and films. It's tropical. It's breezy. There's trees and palm trees everywhere. There are some noise disturbances in the background of this interview, not many, but I think you'd agree that it's sort of the charm and appeal of Cairns itself. We're dropping in on Jamie as he's going about his thing. So you get an impression of Jamie, you also get an impression of Cairns. And by the way, if you've ever thought of visiting Cairns to take in a Taipans game and then go and dive at the Reef or something similar, do take your chance. The Reef is, well, it's in a state of disrepair, and the sooner and better you can take advantage of it, do. I asked Jamie about Scott Machado, who's just announced that he's returning on a two-year deal. I'd heard about the amounts and lengths of the deals offered. Most of it was pretty public, a lot of it during last season, in fact, and was very confident of Machado's return. But to Jamie's credit, never let slip confirming nor denying. I have one regret from this interview. You always come away with one where you're like, I should have asked that. This one's no exception. I wish I'd asked him about the Jack Jumpers head coaching spot and what sort of pitch, what would be the construction or content of his pitch to a board of Tasmanian basketball higher-ups. But I think after listening to this chat, you'll be able to form your own opinion of Jamie as a person and as a potential NBL head coach. So maybe I didn't have to ask him that question. But nonetheless, enjoy this chat. This is with Jamie O'Loughlin, head assistant coach of the Cairns Taipans. Jamie, actually, first thing I'll do is, for those who may be uninitiated, introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and go for it.
Yeah, Jamie O'Loughlin. I'm the assistant coach with the Cairns Taipans, and I've been coaching basketball since I was 18, so around about 30 years involved coaching, and obviously played a little bit as a young fella before that. But probably the last 15 years or so, it's been involved a lot at the elite end of the game, so elite junior and elite senior basketball, and that's been a lot of fun.
I want to jump to something. I don't know if you're a podcast listener, Jamie, but I heard a podcast the other day, Jack McCallum. He has a thing called the Dream Team Tapes. Definitely worth your time. It's about his interviews with the Dream Team before they went to Barcelona. And he gave this advice to young journalists. And he said, always speak to the assistant coach, because they're after the head coach's job. They'll talk. What's your response to something like that?
Well, I hadn't heard that one. I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I haven't heard that one. It's an interesting take on things, on the relationship. But I definitely have listened to a lot. And I guess one thing is that I have not heard a single assistant coach sort of speak out of school you know, and I guess a lot of assistant coaches aspire to be head coaches. But I'd be really surprised if they thought that they could do that at the expense of one, their head coach, or two, the fabric of the club. So yeah, it may look maybe, but it's certainly not something that that I would think about doing.
Nor is it. I want to jump to something else. One of the taglines of the NBL is it's the most scouted league in the world. And I think it might be a bit of a square question, but I think people are pretty interested in it. Yeah. When you talk about scouting in the NBL, and let's say we're in season and you've got a game, let's say it's a Monday morning and you've got a game on Saturday night. What is your nuts and bolts routine Monday through to that game in preparation for that game?
Yeah. So we're assuming we just played Saturday night and and it's the full week, right? So
full week, yeah.
So usually you would find on the Sunday, it would be recovery for the players. Now, if it's a home game, obviously, so let's go perfect world. It's a home game to home game as well.
Let's do that.
So the Sunday would be recovery for the players, and for the coaches, it would be review. Then rolling into the Monday.
What's that review process? Sorry to interrupt you, Jamie. Is that where you watch the game over again, or you guys just sit in a room and chat?
I think every club's a little bit different. So the way we've been doing it here for the last definitely the last 2 years, because I've had two head coaches while I've been here. But the last 2 years, we actually take a copy of the game each home afterwards. So we do the post-game function and then head home. It's pretty common for us to watch it ourselves at home straight after, like that night, even though it will mean a late night. And sometimes cut it up. Our third assistant
you'll
coach
do that yourself on Adobe or no?
On Sports Code. So we have a third assistant coach who that's part of his task is to do a bit of a cut for us, which is a basic cut, but it does assist. And he'll email us the XML file, which we drop into the Sports Code. And so we would then go through it ourselves. So Mike does, we sort of break it up. Mike tends to look at the individuals. I tend to focus on the offense, and Brad Hill tends to focus on the defense. So that we can come back together on Monday morning. And while we would have also taken notes or had some thoughts about other parts of the game, we've also got a focus area. So we kind of present to each other on our focus area. And obviously, you know, because we do see other things happening, we'll have comment, you know, I might suggest something about our offense, and then Brad might say, yeah, but I saw this. So you take all that on board as part of our review. So we'll review to each other. And then usually that morning, the players will sit in a video review in our, we've got a classroom, at our training facility at Cairns Basketball, which is, courtesy of the partnership between CQ, cause we have the sports science lab is on site at our facility. So, we use their classroom, which is great. It's very brand new. So the guys sit down, they get to watch a little bit of film. We don't kill them. But certainly the key points from the game, and then we head down court. So there's that video review. And then that day, usually you get with your, say, three or four players that you have individually. So I've had the wings. Okay. So, you know, I'll grab Mirko, I'll grab Quat, DJ Nooble, George Blagojevich. So I'll grab them each just for 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll have some clips for them individually as well. So that'll happen usually before practice or after practice on that first day. So heavy review day the first day, and that's also predominantly the content of practice as well, is in regard to that last game.
Right. And then, keep going.
Yeah, well, then it's rolling into the next one. So whoever's got the scout, let's say it's my scout, I would have been compiling that information over probably 2, 3, 4 weeks, just bit by bit in the background.
On your opponent.
Yeah, that's it. So I'll be sort of doing that. So that, you know, basically come that Tuesday, you know, I've kind of been mostly ready for maybe a week, but I'm just getting that extra one game of information that might have happened the same day we played, comparing that against what I've got, adding some fresh clips because you want, you know, we like to have the most recent clips to show the guys. Obviously, the quality is mostly important, but how close to our game is it? And also, when did we play them last? So I compile that and start to drip feed that information to the players from the Tuesday in sort of, you know, bite-sized chunks.
Yeah, right.
And that will be some video, some on court, some just discussion with the players, and some of them like written stuff, so we'll provide a written scout as well. So they've kind of got all that at the start of the week, but we just give little bits. So through Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they'd be getting little chunks that they could easily work out.
And would I be right in saying that those little chunks would be something like, and this is a total guess, but all right, we're playing Melbourne United. Chris Golding prefers to take two dribbles to the left and shoot it. So push him right, and you're doing little drills to simulate that. Would I be right in saying it's something like that?
Not so much in that regard. Like that would come as part of like a personnel scout, which is our written scout, and we have video clip of the player tendencies. So the players have access to that on a shared network that we have. So Huddle provide that base for us. So we can drop our clips from Sports Code now, especially now that they're the one company. We drop those clips straight into Huddle, and the players are notified when the clips are up for them to watch, which will be review clips of themselves. And then also, let's say I'm guarding Chris, then or I know that I'm likely to guard Chris, I'll definitely hone in on that early in the week. If I'm someone else, like I'm Cam Oliver, I'll want to see those clips of Chris, but probably late in the week, just to go, all right, if I switch onto him, what's going to happen? So that happens a lot through the video, and just a little bit on court when we say, okay, they run two circle, and on two circle they run, it's this action for Chris, and this is what he tends he likes to do because it's a play for him. Yeah. So that's kind of where it gets into that, but it's more about structure, how they like to play, where they have their advantages, where they have their weaknesses or not their strengths, at least. I don't know if any team really is weak when you get to the NBL level.
Yeah, right.
They're either really strong or they're just good. So you talk about those things and opportunities to try to either mess with them when they're good or take advantage where they're not quite as good.
Makes sense. When you say you watch the game again, because I had Liam San Maria on here, and he said that sometimes he'll watch or most of the time he'll watch the game without the commentary on. He'll mute it just so he's fully focused on his impressions of the game and his thoughts. He's not persuaded to think with the commentators. When you're watching tape or even when you're watching the game, what are you looking for and in what environment? And really, if you're a fan in the stands and if you were to inform a fan about how to really look beyond the superficial, how do you really break it down? What are you looking for when you're scouting these games and watching them?
Well, in my role, I tend to find myself seeing the game three times. Once live, then again, I'll watch it usually, as I said before, that night. Mm-hmm. And then I'll watch it again a third time early in the week, maybe probably the next day, more often than not.
Right.
And each time with a different purpose. So obviously during the game, I'm watching for trends within the game. Communication, body language.
From the opposition or both?
Both. So just, again, looking for opportunity or looking for, you know, where we could, want to make a change. Definitely look at trends within it, tactical trends, etc. So sorts of things like that on the fly. And then the next time through, now I'm starting to really look at the hard evidence around, okay, this is what they did to us here. This is what we did to them. How good was it? And I start to evaluate each possession with a microscope. And then the third time through, I'll go back and watch it again. And then I'll actually have some questions. So I will have gone through my review. I'll have fed back to the other coaches and even start a presentation to the players. Usually it sets me off. It sets me off on more questions. So usually that third time I go through, I'm just going back, I just want to see I didn't really look at that closely enough last time. What were they doing on that, on the post or whatever it might have been, or out of bounds that was giving us trouble? I didn't really pick it up. Let me go back and study it. So that's just that final, for me, that final sweep to make sure I've picked up on everything that happened, because there's an awful lot of subtlety that goes on that you don't necessarily see during the game. Like, you hope to see it, but you don't always notice it because so much other stuff is going on.
I was about to say, here, this is the next one I've got. You kind of covered it there, but viewing conditions for an NBL game. Do you ever listen with the sound off like Liam Samaria does? Commentary off, no.
It depends. I actually tend to like to have the noise of the game and the commentary going. You know, sometimes it riles me up a little bit when they say something about our guys or whatever, but or something I know is not right. I enjoy it, to be honest. I like to hear. I often go into the office I might text Mike. Did you hear when he said that? No. So it's a bit of entertainment, honestly, for me.
So the commentators, you are listening. Yeah, you will.
I listen. I take it for what it is because it's entertainment, and you know they're engaging. They're trying to engage with such a wide range of people. I understand it. I don't take offense to it, or anything like that, or take it the other way where, you know, if they're ramping, sort of pumping us up, it doesn't really get me excited. Oh, gee, we're good. As I said, it's a bit of entertainment and I don't mind. I like hearing what's happening because you can sometimes hear, what the referees are saying. You can hear what they're saying in timeouts. You can hear, just general communication, even for our own guys.
Yeah, right. Have you ever listened to the commentary and thought, oh, that's quite articulate analysis, and then palmed it off as your own?
No, I haven't done that. Okay. But it doesn't mean that I haven't listened and said, you know what, they're on point.
Right. But, you think the commentary is pretty accurate a lot of the time?
Not too bad. Like, I think it's actually quite difficult because, you know, your mandate is to get as many people to watch as possible. So provide entertainment. So, you know, it's sometimes there's outrageous things being said on there, but I kind of can see why they're saying that because it creates conversation.
Makes sense. Let's take a bit of a somber turn. Perth Wildcats lost to them in the semi-final. We've talked a lot about scouting. I'm sure you've watched those games a number of times. Broad question. Why do you think you lost?
Firstly, congratulations to Perth and the players and the coaching staff because, you know, they put together a fine season and we enjoyed some very, very good battles with them.
They were amazing. That game where Cotton had 42 the overtime, and that was the, you know, if an alien came down from outer space and said, what, show me the best NBL game, I'd go, oh, easy. What was it, game one or game two? I forget, but I'd go, yeah, this game.
Game one, yeah.
It was just so tactical. Yeah. Mike Kelly was going back and forth with Gleeson. That was like chess on the hardwood. I really love that one. Sorry, I interrupted that.
No, not at all. It was fun. That's the thing. Like they're the battles that you want to be in. And I think we had great games against them all season. And you know, I suppose there may be even something more enjoyable for me because of the fact that I worked there for 3 years. So it's fun to, you know, try to beat your old team. And certainly there's still players there and some coaching staff that were there while I was there. So it's enjoyable to play against them. Especially when they've been so good for so long. So, but look, it was great. But at the end of the day, you know, there's lots of things that go into winning and losing one game, let alone a series. But I mean, what jumped out to us, and I don't think it's a surprise, but the possession game was huge. And when you look across that three-game series, they had 17 more offensive rebounds than we did. They had 13 less turnovers. So,
isn't that them in a T, you know?
Yeah, and they do it really well, and it's not like it was that we're like, oh, you know, I'm surprised that they rebounded the ball or that they forced turnovers. You're not, but you still have to deal with it, and we didn't deal with different parts well, and we tried to keep them off the glass. And we weren't terrible at keeping off the glass. They were very good at keeping us off the glass. And that was big part of that, that differential. The turnovers, well, that was all game one. And, you know, we were maybe 13 turnovers different in game one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous. And so it was a self-inflicted wound, some parts, and it was great defense on other parts from them. So, you'd like to think, you know, if we could just take care of the ball a fraction better, then we walk out of game one with a win, we go home and we take game two and we're in the grand final. But it didn't happen. And, well done to Perth for forcing us into as many errors.
Cotton, I think, had four of his five lowest scoring games last year against Cairns. If you're comfortable with it, what was the strategy against him?
We tried to be aggressive with him, to be honest. I think if you are passive with great players like Bryce, they just kill you. And so, we weren't going to do that. If we were going to go down, we're going to go down punching. And that was certainly the mindset we had with it. We're going to take it right to Bryce. He's an incredible player and it takes an awful lot of effort. Fortunately, we had, guys who are very smart defenders like DJ Newble and Scott Machado, who both of those guys managed to spend a decent amount of time on him, even Jared Kenny. And Jared knows him, obviously, from playing with him when he first came out to Australia. So we had three guards that we liked against him. I was talking to Mike Kelly and I'm like, a good game against Andrew Gaze for you back in the day, mate, was keeping him to 30. And because that was six below his average. Well, that's how DJ Newball might feel if he has, Bryce kept to 20 because he averages 26 or whatever. So,
I mean, it seemed to me the strategy as well was when he comes off a pick, you can double him and blitz him and really get out to him. Was that the sort of nuts and bolts strategy you guys had?
Don't get the ball out of his hands don't let him get it first thing and get the ball out of his hands. I mean, the easiest way to guard someone is to make sure they haven't got the ball.
Got it the first one. Departure from the Wildcats. This Bunnings thing. Have you seen this new stadium? Are you excited about the prospect? Do you shop at Bunnings?
Well, everyone shops at Bunnings.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we all have to own up to that one. In fact, I was even there on the weekend to get some mosquito coils for
Yeah, I would think so.
it's been something that's going to be important to us. And it turns out that it's going to be important to the WNBL because they're about to play a whole bunch of games in that facility starting Saturday. It's already going to be beneficial to both the NBL and the WNBL and basketball in Cairns. And I think from that respect, we don't have a WNBL team in Cairns. The nearest is in Townsville. So it's great for our young women and girls to be able to go see live a bunch of games, which will be great. And hopefully that inspires, even more talent to come out of the far north, even though they're pretty good at it.
Yeah. It's such a unique little thing. And I just think it's really charming, the idea of having it there and this purpose-built facility. It's kind of neat. I want to change gear again. Recruiting imports and scouting imports. I think a lot of fans, because it's one of the sort of gray areas of the NBL. It's very hard to scout international players. The time difference makes it hard to watch Euro games. You see highlights from 10 years ago of some guys. How do you recruit imports? What's your process when you're doing that? As it pertains to, let's say, take it to DJ Newble. Where did you first hear about him? Did you go by word of mouth? Do you look at scouting tapes? How do you know you're getting return on investment? That's my question.
Yep. And I've been lucky enough to cut my teeth looking for imports in the Siebel. For 9 years, I was with the Geelong Supercats and as an assistant and as a head coach. And so you kind of get a feel for things there. And obviously you're not looking at the same level of talent, but you start to come up with a format. At the end of the day, it's lots and lots of hours of watching film, talking to coaches, talking to scouts, crunching numbers. So it doesn't matter what level you're at, you end up doing all that. And obviously, the better relationship you can have with agents makes a big difference because, they want their players to be in great spots. And so that relationship can be important. But if we look really specifically at last year, DJ Newble originally came to us the year before. And when Mike got the job as head coach. A few weeks later, I was appointed in the assistant coaching position. And one of our first conversations was, all right, what roster pieces do we need? Some were already in place. What imports do we want? And Mike and I both had really admired DJ Newble with the Breakers. And we both said, look, what's going on with him? He's not going back there. So let's find out. So we dug a little deeper.
Sorry to interrupt, Jeremy. You knew he wasn't going back to the Breakers because he just wasn't?
So we'd reached out to the agent to say, hey, look, we're interested in what DJ's doing, what's going on. You know, we're starting to work out. So we liked the way he played. We liked what we'd heard from some players that had played with him. We spoke to Paul Hanare, and he was glowing in regard to DJ Neubel. So it made it easy for us to really push harder. Then we interviewed him, and when he interviewed, it was brilliant. So it was just seemed like a perfect fit, to be honest. And you know, we were able to make it happen, and I'm glad, because he was amazing for us in what was a difficult first season. You know, with the change of, well, basically a whole change of players and coaches. So a restart, and then was amazing last year. And you know, I can't speak highly enough of him as a player, but also as a guy around the club and a friend.
Let's go Scott Machado. I mean, he was a guy who I think really turned the whole team, the whole season around. He was fantastic. So he'd had sort of a tryout with the Lakers. I understand he had a bit of interest from other NBL clubs. How did you secure him? And then also, how did you kind of, where do you put, and this is maybe a question you can or can't answer, but the money, when you're like, okay, this guy, what value of money do we put on this guy? How do you graph that? Do you kind of work out, oh, we think we're going to get this return? And you know, how do you make the money work, is my question.
Well, I'll go reverse, because you kind of get given a budget from the front office, and look, this is kind of what you're going to have. And that's an ongoing conversation, because it's all relative. You know, if you end up filling a position a little bit cheaper than you thought, then obviously you can now potentially shift that elsewhere. So it does move around a bit, but you kind of have a feel. And that does help, because when you're talking to agents, you know, there's probably no point in having in-depth discussions about a guy who's going to be, you know, 100,000 a month, you know, if you've got 10. So, yeah, right. You know, it's, there's a little bit of that happens. I think with, and particularly with Scott, both Mike and I had scouted Scott before, and not to the point of making an offer or anything, but he was, because he was at the time very content doing what he was doing and in a good place. You know, whether that was overseas or in the G League.
Yeah.
When we thought about who we needed, what the type of player we needed, he ticked a lot of boxes for us. And because we'd obviously done a thorough review after that first season. And so we had a good idea about who we wanted in the point spot and who we wanted in the front court, because we knew we had DJ coming back. So we made a very clear plan in our mind about what that player played like, looked like, what kind of a person he was, etc. And Scott ticked boxes, and honestly, it was really timing, because you know, we reach out and it was like, look, he's ready. His agent's like, yeah, he's interested. He's interested in going another direction and trying another way, you know, for his career. So the timing was perfect. You know, obviously, then it goes over to Mark Beecroft to work out. Can this work from a numbers point of view? So it's, even though we're given a range, you know, it's Mark Beecroft, it's Troy Stone, who then deal with where it ends up.
You, I'm assuming, as an assistant coach or even Mike Kelly, you're not sitting across from an agent, or maybe you are, in those conversations where it's money. No, that's GM, that's agent and player exclusive.
Yeah, we're more in the ballpark. As long as we're talking similar language and we know we're talking a similar language, then I think then it's it goes on that step further. Obviously, we don't want to take it to the top at our end when we know the player's just way, way out of our range, and it's a silly conversation to be having.
Are agents quite upfront or quite clinical about, like, do they have sort of a notepad and they're like, yep, here's the players that are X amount of money per month, here, like that, or are they kind of a little bit more, how do agents mostly behave?
They're all really different. And I look, some of them literally, you know, you get the email and it says, you know, Joe is 25K a month, and that's what it is, you know.
Right, plus it's pinnacle, right.
Pretty much as you are paid now. But so it just goes different, you know, different ways. Others, they won't sort of talk like that. They'll maybe call you or email you directly and see what you're looking for, and then come back with really specific, rather than a list of 50 players, they'll come back, all right, from what you've told me, here's the best or the second best that I think could work for you. And the good thing about that is that they already kind of would know, all right, well, this player is interested in this, like they'd reach out, say, hey, you know, Scott, I got Australia on the line, like, you know, there's a club there that's interested, what And if he, I think if he was then to just say no, then he wouldn't even be suggested to us by the agent, or they'd shut it down real quick. So there's been some feeling out that goes on before in that case. And I think that's where it actually moves a lot faster when the agent does those bits and pieces behind the scenes to cut out some of the conversation.
Do you, like, there's a lot of shows about agents. I think there was the Arliss show, Entourage things. Do you enjoy that part of the sort of, what would be the more business side of it? Do you enjoy it, or do you get bogged down in it sometimes?
No, usually I enjoy it. I enjoy the chat with the agents. I mean, the guys that I've spoken to, a lot of different agents, some based in Australia, the US, Europe, so all around the world. And for the most part, I've had good conversations with them, and they've helped to find players or set me in the right direction about what might fit, because they know that player well and whether they might like it. So yeah, I've actually enjoyed it, but I've never been really sitting there at that last bit crunching the final numbers. That's always gone across to the front office, and I'd probably like to sit in it sometimes just to get a more of a feel for that last moment. But right up until that point, you're constantly talking with the agent and sometimes the player.
Tell me, is there any gamesmanship between NBL clubs? Like, I refuse to believe that Scott Machado, you were the only guys looking at him, only in a club. Is there ever a text or a conversation exchange where, like, you know, yeah, bit us, appreciate that. You know, is there a bit of gamesmanship in that respect?
I've not had it direct, but definitely through the agents. I'm like, hey, look, you know, Melbourne's looking at him. So, this is just the way it is. So, which is fine. And I think sometimes there's maybe some gamesmanship in that, because it may be a way of trying to drive a price up, as an example. Who knows? But
of course,
you get that from time to time.
I want to do this one. I probably should have done it at the top, but what do you define the role of assistant coach as? If you can slim the definition as tightly as you can, both mainly in games. When you're in games, what is the role of an assistant coach first and foremost?
Well, I mean, just whether it's in game or not, it's just to be the absolute best support to the head coach and whatever that means. So obviously let's say in a game, you know, that's going to be giving him succinct feedback, because you don't want to cloud his mind during the game. So
succinct is a good word. Point. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I like that.
So that's important. Because there's so much happening, and even at halftime, when there's a little bit more mental space, it's dot point, you know. So, and of course, also there's stuff that he just doesn't have time for as well physically during the game. You know, a guy might check out of the game and go down to the end of the bench. He hasn't got time now to disengage from the action or his thoughts to go down and talk to player X about good, bad, or otherwise. So it's over to us. To manage those sorts of things and just be another set of eyes, you know, around the court in general. It's a bit different, I think, overall, because I think overall what's important is that there's a really high level of respect between head coach and assistant coach, that you complement each other's strengths, not that you have the same strengths. Yes, you might share some, but I think it's very important that you give each other something in an area that maybe isn't their number one thing. And the last one is really just to have each other's back. And right. if you don't, then it's not a good place to be. And when I say all this stuff, you know, it's really important that practically that Mike and I can walk into the office on Monday morning and we could have a screaming match about what happened and what we should do. And then when we walk out the door and go to the game or to practice or go home that day, that we're on the same page.
Yeah, right.
And so that no one would ever know if we've just had a Barney about pick and roll coverage, you know, or who we should recruit or not recruit or whatever. Because we've done that. That's we're allowed to have our own opinion because we do have different strengths.
You often see an assistant coach jump up to a head coach role, and I think the biggest pitfall they make is being too nice. Their rotations are too lengthy, and we've seen that in the NBA, we've seen it in the NBL, we've seen it all over. How much of it is good cop, bad cop? How much are you the good cop? How much is occasionally Mike the bad cop? And if you were to make that transition to head coaching, Do you think you'd excel at it? Do you think that's an issue where a lot of assistant coaches are too nice when they make that transition to head coach?
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I think it's, you often see rotations bigger at the start of seasons because you're a lot more optimistic about, you know, the, each player's progression they've made from the off season. Often you've just played a bunch of practice games where it's not NBL level. And so pretty much everyone does shine at different times. So you're very optimistic about everyone's chance to have a strong impact. And then the games happen and then things start to change. And you don't really know who that's going to be necessarily. Sometimes a guy you really had high hopes for just ends up just sort of falling a little bit. And other times, guys who were just putting along all of a sudden find a spot in the rotation and they become, gold dust. Right. So I do think that it just happens gradually through the season. Then you start to narrow down on who's getting it done and who's not getting it done.
Let's jump into that. So I call this question sort of the breaks of the game, going back to NBL 20. Quite Noi, beginning of the year, came out pretty gangbusters, had some high-scoring games. I looked at his game log the other day, and his first 10, 15 games, he was in the 20s, was scoring high. Gets hurt and then kind of loses a bit of confidence, loses his spot. And the question I have for you was, Mirko Jeric then came off the bench, put into the starting lineup. And I don't know, I think it was even Cam Tregar said this, that the idea that Quat Noi kind of needed that starting spot for his confidence. Was there a conversation about this, about perhaps leaving in the starting lineup to get that confidence, or where did you make the call on that? It's my question, Jamie.
Yeah, it was a real shame that Quat got hurt because he was adjusting really, really well to the NBL. Obviously, coming out of college and is his first year and to play with men. Also, adjusting from a TCU, he really played as a four man. So maybe like a, you know, the Jesse Wagstaff type role, can shoot it, bit of post occasionally, quite mobile. So he was shifted to a different position, and it's actually one of the biggest shifts to make. A lot of players have failed at making that shift from the four down to the three or 3-2 area. And he was heading there, and we were very happy with how he was going. He gets hurt. We know he's out for a while. We didn't know it was going to be that long. It was 10. And Mirko was given the chance, and Mirko did an amazing job. I mean, we were 8-2. We lost the first game, I think it was, without Quat. So there was obviously some adjustment period in there. And then we lost one to Sydney in Sydney, I think it was, which were the only games in which, you know, not many people were beating Sydney in Sydney. And we went to and fro that game. I think we'd actually played two nights before somewhere else as well. But I don't want to make excuses. We lost that game, but we were 8-2, playing really well. And Quat comes back with 3 games to go before the playoffs. Yeah. So are you going to change the starting lineup of an 8-2 team as you're rolling in? Well, probably not. And so Quat was challenged to make another change. Can you be an impact guy off the bench for us in a slightly different role? And the truth is that he actually did do that. And so I was really proud of him, to be honest. And obviously, I mean, he's wing coach, so yeah. I'm a little bit closer to it. And it's like he's like one of my kids. And so I was really happy for him that he could do that. And he didn't ever drop his head with it. He slowly got his fitness back. And was looking really good for us in the finals. So I don't think we regret it. I think we're really happy that Mirko took his opportunity. We're very happy that Quat faced 2 distinct challenges last season, and I feel like did well in both of them. And I think, and I haven't crunched the number for this discussion, but his point per minute value may not have actually been a whole lot different as an example.
Yeah, I didn't run the numbers on that. His points per game went down, but points per minute, I didn't do that calculation. Yeah, probably.
He played a lot less and in a slightly different role. So it's maybe a little unfair to just go straight off, well, you average, 10 and 6, and now you're averaging 6 and 4. But internally, we were happy with him, and we're really happy. We're really optimistic about what he's going to be able to do for us going forward, and hopefully in the future, maybe even at a higher level.
Well, the NBA draft just went. Unfortunately, didn't hear his name called. Have you spoken to him since?
Yeah. And we were all behind.
Was he quite sort of understanding of that, or he could understand his value, and in the NBA scheme of things, he was sort of realistic, is the word I'm searching for.
I think so. I think that his agent had been talking to him for some time about the process. We had been talking with him. He'd interviewed with a dozen or so teams. He obviously did the pro day and the shooting drills. And so he'd been through it. He'd been getting some feedback along the way. You know, he obviously would have liked to have had his name called. It didn't happen. I think I got a stat yesterday, something like 136 or something of the players in the NBA last season were undrafted.
Brian Bowen won amongst them. Like, Brian Bowen's a wing player. I mean, if you're looking at Brian Bowen with the Sydney Kings, you're looking at Kouatanoi, different age bracket, but I know who I'd take as the better player, you know, and that's no offense to Brian Bowen.
I think he was good about it. He messaged us literally straight after the 60th pick. There was a message to our group in regard to, let's go get a championship. Okay. So, he obviously was hopeful of something with the NBA happening and remains that way. I don't think that's changed because of what we just spoke about.
Going back to NBL 20, how on earth did you lose to Illawarra 3 times? I had Josh Boone on this podcast. He didn't have an answer for it. He didn't have a clear answer. He just sort of said, we just kind of won. I'm hoping you can figure it out in reverse. What happened? Yeah. 3 times. Yeah. Once. Yeah. It's like, fool me once. fool me twice. 3 times. What happened?
Well, we played 4 different teams for a start because they never had the same lineup, and their first lineup was very nice.
Good point, Aaron Brooks. Yeah.
So, and he played well in that first game. There was 2 close games that we just didn't close out. And, that was just poor finish to the games by us because we probably should have taken control of those. The second game they played us, they beat us. And the fourth game, we flat out beat them. And so it was an interesting series that it was probably, it could have easily been 3-1 the other way. And it turned out to be 1-3. And then we sort of break it down. Because we did think about this, as well. And we reviewed every series, to be honest. So it wasn't that we honed in on Illawarra. Each 4-game package was separately reviewed just to see, where we're at against that style of play.
Right.
Obviously, it's interesting how you're more successful against different styles and how can you be better against the ones you're not so good. But I think the first game was the third game of the season. We just lost to Brisbane 2 nights before and they beat us. Like, they beat us well. And we actually played a lot better in the Illawarra game. And I think there was a foul with about 1 second on the clock. We'd missed a shot to basically put ourselves up. Ogilvy gets fouled on a pick and roll and he goes to the line and it gets it done. So we didn't close it out. We should have. We had the game. We didn't get it done. The second one. Sorry.
Wasn't there an occasion when... And this is on Mike Kelly a little bit, called that timeout that took the ball into the front court. Jared Kenny did the turnover. Was that against Illawarra? So I remember that one. I'm getting a bit of heat for that.
Southeast. I think Southeast. Maybe that's I think that's a Southeast game.
It's all a while ago now.
Yeah, no, that's it. That is the thing too. It's a long while ago.
It was 200 days ago or something like that. Crazy.
I know, which is bizarre. Second game they outplayed us. LaMelo had...
Was there an element of, because LaMelo Ball handled the ball so much and their structure was very kind of pretty laissez-faire, did you find that threw off? Were you like, we don't know what they're going to do. This guy's going to dribble it a fair bit and then kind of make a play. Was there an element of that maybe?
Not really. Like, let's go, even in that particular game, he hit 25% of his season threes in that game. He hit 5-3. Okay. He hit 20 for the season. He was a poor shooter and he went 5 of 8 or something.
And hit the big one. Like, if I remember, that's the one where Machado's diving at him, yeah.
Yeah, so, that happened. And as a team that game, they shot the lights out and beat us. And then the next one, we played Perth a couple of days prior to this one and then went there. We'd beaten Perth and we were playing really well. And then this game was the overtime game. So, honestly, they did a great job They really fought back because the game was over. We had it. They fought back. They hit the transition three against a contest on the buzzer to go overtime. And then we just were flat in the overtime. And
I remember.
And again, so didn't close it. And the fourth one, I mean, you feel sorry for them because that fourth game, they were a shadow of the team they started the season. They still competed, but they just, they weren't able, and we were rolling. So that was the series. Like I said, yes, from the outside looking in, you can sit there and go, well, they should beat them. If you break it down, you can kind of see where it was. And out for us, the learning is closing the game. Two games we should have closed out better.
Right.
The rest of it was just the game of basketball.
That's the takeaway. The next question I had for you was, can you recall a moment where you made, and do it back and forth, where you made a suggestion to Mike Kelly, he didn't take that suggestion and it went poorly, and then on the reverse of that, an occasion where you made a suggestion to Mike Kelly, he did take it and it went poorly. Does anything jump out to you, or no, such occasion really occurred?
Not really, because we do have different points of view and we do debate often. But like I said before, one thing that we both agreed on before I took the job was that we would be able to do that and commit to being able to do that and walk out the door united. Right. So, that's why I say I can't really think of that, because even if it's my idea or it's his idea, when we walk out the door, whichever one we adopt is now our idea. And I think that's been one of the strengths of our relationship, is that we're able to do that.
Cam Oliver's re-signed. That's obviously pretty exciting. Scott Machado remains unsigned. Are you going to sign him or what?
Cam Oliver has re-signed and we're super happy about
2 years.
Him. Yeah, amazing. Look, amazing player and a great person and the young family who's beautiful. And like we were so lucky. We were so lucky that, we got him to commit to our club initially and then obviously to come back. So, we're pretty pumped about it. And we actually think that Cam's, he's still scratching the surface because he's still a young guy. I think people
24,
don't realize.
25, something like that, man.
Yeah, he's still really a kid. Yeah, so crazy. He's got room to grow. And I think when I see a little bit more of that this season, and I know he's determined to continue to evolve as a player. He doesn't think that he's done and that he's ready for anything more than what he does right now. So he wants to chip away at what he's got and be better.
Mm. And Scott Machado?
Well, I would love to see him back here, and hopefully,
fingers crossed.
Hopefully that's what happens. Yeah.
The Last Dance came out recently, and I know that Scott Machado read an article that he is, his first name is actually Michael. Is that my right? But he goes by Scott because he doesn't like Michael. Did it come up? Was that a point of joking around amongst the group or what?
It was funny because it didn't come up early on, and eventually it came up. I think we were sitting around the lunch table and started chatting about it.
Is it genuine? He genuinely hates. Yeah.
Well, he's a Knicks. He's from New York, right?
Oh, of course. So Iona, just north of New York.
Yeah, that time, in that period, MJ owned the Knicks, and it drove him insane. So he wanted nothing to do with it. And that's his story, and he's sticking with it. And so he enjoys being Scott.
When imports got cut down from 3 to 2, it was obvious. Well, it was obviously weren't going to keep all of Newell, Machado, and Oliver. You've now got Oliver back. The second spot remains. Were you quite? Did you sort of approach DJ Newell early on because he signed in Japan pretty early? Did you go to him and say, "Listen, writing's a bit on the wall here. Do you know?" Or was that kind of left in the wind a little bit?
Yeah, it was really difficult because as soon as we were, it was clear that that's the way it was going to be. What do you do? And because we love all three guys, and why wouldn't you? I mean, you're talking about maybe the league MVP or close in Scott, defensive player of the year, and then someone as unbelievably talented and gifted as Cam Oliver. Why would you want any of them not to play for you again? But the rules wouldn't let us. So, we didn't know what we were going to do initially. Obviously, we wanted just to take stock and just see where we're at with everybody. We didn't have other players weren't signed. Not all of our local roster was obviously signed either. So we needed to sit there and look at who was available as free agents, who was coming back to us, who wasn't, etc. fortunately, we've been able to pretty much retain the bulk of our roster, which I think is huge for us.
Yeah.
Continuity is very important to sustain success. And, you know, that's a box that we've been able to tick with the exception of two guys, Anthony Fisher and DJ Neuville. I mean, for DJ, we all love him, and we're really sorry that he's not going to be with us, but we're also really happy for him in that he's landed a great gig in Japan. He's the leading scorer in a playoff level team. It's another good stepping stone for him. And look, I really hope that I get to coach him again one day, because it was a pleasure for the two seasons he was with us.
I want to go back to NBL 19. I remember watching the game one time, and I forget who was it against, but this was in the long, unfortunate losing streak. Mike Kelly wanted everyone to blitz on screens, and Nate Jawai in the timeout stood up and said, "Even me?" And he goes, I said everyone. And they kind of went back and forth. And Mike Kelly kind of went like, "If you don't want to do it, you can sit down." And it got pretty heated in a live timeout, which, thanks to the NBL, they broadcast those. They're great. How does Mike Kelly handle his relationships? How does he take a Jawai and go from that losing a season and make it amicable? How do you repair it? Stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting.
You remember that timeout in particular?
I don't. But I understand what you're saying. So I think what's important to understand is that in that environment, so when you're in the throes of a game, high pressure, player under duress, coach trying to make decisions, and then the game continues, right? So while this is happening and you're trying to deal with this stuff, the game's going on. So there's a new thing. You don't have time to sugarcoat anything. Sometimes you just got to literally say, "Hey, get over that screen." Not, "Right. Hey, it'd be really nice if you could work your way over the top of that screen, champ." So you need to be able to be direct, and you have to understand that that's how we have to communicate at times. And if you're already a little bit, you know, on edge, and someone does that, you can't help but sort of, it could be there for a minute. But when you understand that that's the environment you're in, it washes off pretty quick. And I think, you know, because we'll have arguments, you know, players love arguments in practice. It'll go back and forth.
Why I'm thankful. I'm thankful for the live timeouts, because I think the more the casual fan understands, like, oh no, this is actually like, this is an attrition. This is a friction between a team and their opposition, but also amongst themselves. You know, sometimes the best teams are the ones that not so much, well, the ones that present like they don't like one another. That is quite common. I think a lot of that's lost on a lot of people. I think playing nice, not necessarily the way it goes.
There's probably two things for me. Is one thing is it's respect, and if you do it in a respectful way, usually there's no issue. If you don't do it in a respectful way, there can be an issue. So you can be very direct and done respectfully, and you know, you move on. Everyone moves on. And when maybe there's some residue left over, usually that just gets sorted out in the change room after the game. It's so rare to see anything go on. And usually, you know, if it does, both players are at fault, and both players need to get over themselves in that situation and consider what's the best thing for the team and maybe move on from their little minor disagreement,
right,
in the grand scheme of things. The second thing that I've learned as a coach since going from junior stuff into senior stuff, because at the junior level, you know, the coach usually just nips it in the bud in a second. But don't get it. You can't get attached to it. So as the coach, if one of the players is going nuts and going off, like, I can't get worked up by his emotion. I can't get caught up in what he owns. You know, I need to, yes, I observe it. I try to deal with the situation the best I can, but it's not my emotion, and I need to stay level-headed and calm and think about what's the best way forward for everybody, not just for that player. So that's been an important learning, I think, for me over the journey of working with the elite athletes, is you have to at times have that level of communication or that style of communication. You've got to not adopt someone else's frustration and get caught up in the moment yourself.
Mike Kelly, pretty cool customer. Was there ever an occasion, as best as you can remember, and as specific as you can remember, where he flamed someone? Did he ever come? Yeah. Did he ever like? What's his worst? Well, him at his most, you know, fiery.
Yeah, he definitely is. He does like to keep a cool head. I think you had some times where he's been pretty strong with the guys in the change room.
As a group, I think, or with the guys?
Yeah, as a group, but also mainly individually.
Really?
We've had you know, meetings where we've brought a player in and he's been very direct with their behavior or an incident or whatever that he just needs to address and say, hey, this is not what we do, you know, so what are we going to do about it? So I think what he's been able to do is, because he doesn't rant and rave constantly, is that when he does, you know, come at you directly, then everyone listens, because it's not like it's, oh, well, here goes Mike again. It's not like that. It's, whoa, okay, Mike's, you know, he's not happy here, so we need to listen.
Last question, kind of related to the above, but the word culture, like I kind of go back and forth on this. Like sometimes like, oh, the team's got such a good culture. And it's like, well, they also had, you know, like with the Wildcats, oh, they've got this Wildcat culture. It's culture. Well, they've also got Bryce Cotton, who's one of the best he's ever played. I always push the dial towards talent. You know, like if a team's more talented, you know, have a guess who's going to win. We were talking about it before. Like what is culture versus pleasantness? Like if you could define culture as you define it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's what you accept. It's the behaviors that you accept. And if we accept poor behavior, you know, one time, then
what constitutes poor behavior, Jamie?
Really bad body language. Being disrespectful towards, being disrespectful towards teammates, referees, whatever it might be. You know, so anything that you know, we as a group have decided, and usually this is, you know, every team, not every team, teams that I've been involved in will usually sit down at the start of a season and discuss what it is that we're about and what we stand for. So what behaviours do we think are associated with high-level success and high-level performance, and that's what we aspire to, and we've got to try to hold each other accountable to those things. And that is what culture is holding each other accountable to what we agree. Not so much, Mike says this how it should be, because if it's like that, then it can be very difficult for players to buy in. And so therefore, it's not your culture. We all have to be part of that. And it doesn't mean that you're not, like we spoke about in regard to the timeout, it doesn't mean that we're not going to disagree over certain things. But if the agreed points about behaviours will remain constant, but we still might, you know, get upset about the pick and roll coverage and you know, yell at someone about why didn't you hard show.
But it doesn't mean.
I think the thing is you've just got to make sure that you maintain a growth mindset with those sorts of things. Yes, we can disagree, but then how do we get better? Because this is obviously we're frustrated because it's not working. Yeah. And if we can quickly shift to the solution rather than just lament the issue, then we are going to get better.
Last question for you, and I'll let you go. But are you much of a reader? It sounds like so much of the job is kind of organizing your thoughts. So much of the job is understanding people, psychology. So you could almost put it down to it's almost a teaching role, which if putting basketball way away, you know, it's about being a teacher, organizing your thoughts, and being clear and succinct in your public speaking. And the other part of it seems to be so much about psychology. So, do you read books like Malcolm Gladwell's Outsiders or his latest book? I think it's called Talking to Strangers, about how to communicate to people. Are you into that sort of stuff away from basketball?
I do. I mean, I go through phases with the reading and obviously it depends on the time of year. Obviously in season, it might be it's a great circuit breaker. Even though it may still be about your profession, a great circuit breaker from, say, you know, scouting the last two Hawks games to break it with something. And it could be a book in regard to leadership or whatever. It doesn't have to be totally off topic. But I'm big on podcasts as well. I love it. Especially right now, there is a bunch of great.
What's your favorite? Or if you don't mind, give people some of your favorites.
The Great Coaches one right now.
Yeah.
It's not very old, but it's first class. So I've enjoyed that. Finding Mastery, I really have loved, which is a great sports psychology one. Right. But there's a bunch, so I won't plug them all. They're fun. I definitely get into it. And then like I cycle back around, and like I've literally just reread, Chop Wood, Carry Water. I'm rereading Legacy because I love those books. So there's some that if they've really been good for me, powerful for me, I tend to cycle back after a year or two or whatever and go back again. Because I sometimes just pick up something else, or I can connect better with something else now because I've had more experiences. And it helps me sort those out for the next time around. So, yeah, I do love it. And I think it's important to be a lifelong learner when you're an educator, as you say. If the minute you stop trying to learn, I think you probably should hang it up and just watch others.
Speaking of hanging it up, Jamie, I'm going to let you go. Pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, no, me too. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed this chat, be sure to subscribe to the NBL Pocket Podcast Patreon. There's exclusive podcasts and articles coming up on that when the season starts. Also, if you think about buying a book over Christmas for a gift or for yourself, if you're going on a summer holiday to somewhere like Cairns, by all means, use the link in the description. That helps the program as well. And then lastly, the same old stuff that everyone says, subscribe, rate, and review if you enjoyed it. And then you get a new episode of these every week. And that's good. Looks like a season's going to happen. Looks like it's coming late in December in the new year. So that is exciting stuff. And I will see you then. Bye.